The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Overnight, the frantic flow of migrants was relentless. We were there not with federal border patrol agents, but with rangers from the Texas Department of Public Safety.
This is what Texas DPS agents say they're seeing more of each and every night. Rafts full of women and children making the dangerous trek across the Rio Grande. They're saying they're having to patrol more of this area because federal resources are stretched so thin.
Do you consider what you see here a crisis?
It is a crisis. It is. I mean, you see for yourself how easy it is for these smugglers to raft these migrants across. They have no fear of law enforcement because they drop them off. They'll go back to Mexico, bring another group.
No fear of law enforcement, so says a border agent. That's NBC News, by the way. That's NBC News reporting from the border, reporting from South Texas. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live stream at our website, as always, live at 11 a.m. now, here in the Central Time Zone of the United States. That's at thetrumpet.com/live. And then also, submit us some feedback if you like. You can email the program, td@kpcg.fm. Lots and lots to get to on today's program. A jam-packed show. Let me just play for you Jen Psaki. This is the fake press secretary, and her response, or at least her statement, regarding the border crisis just a couple of days ago. This is clip 14.
I wanted to provide a brief update on the situation at our southern border. After 4 years of an immigration system rooted in destructive and chaotic policies, President Biden is taking the challenge head on and is building a fair, orderly, and humane immigration system. That's our objective. After coming into office, our administration immediately jumped into action to address the influx of migrants at the border, something that began during and was exacerbated by the Trump administration.
So it's the Trump administration. It's Donald Trump's fault. It's always Trump's fault. He had these destructive and chaotic policies. Theirs, however, theirs are fair. Theirs are orderly. Theirs are humane. Listen again to NBC. NBC reporting at the border just yesterday. This is clip 13.
Since March, state officials say they've referred more than 28,000 migrants to the Federal Border Patrol. They've also seized more than 5,700 pounds of marijuana, almost 100 pounds of cocaine, and more than $1 million in currency.
Yeah, but other than that, I guess it's mostly lawful, mostly peaceful down there. Here they're gathering all this marijuana, cocaine, trafficking money, trafficking human beings, 28,000 human beings turned over to border control. And Jen Psaki, she gets up in front of the cameras and says, hey, it's perfect. It's orderly. It's humane. It's totally fair. In fact, it's a disaster. It's a catastrophe. We, in the next Trumpet, I believe this will be the August issue, we write about Joe Biden's border catastrophe. Look for that in the next issue of The Trumpet. We just posted the most recent one, the July issue. Jab or else. That's another big story as well. As they roll out the vaccines and apply this intense pressure on Americans, everyone, to get this jab. And we've played the clips, the sound bites for you of late. All these prominent commentators who are basically saying you should be punished. You should be punished if you don't get the double jab. Well, as we say in the most recent Trumpet, the July issue, jab or else, that's what's on the cover. And the issue says vaccines have been hailed as the miracle that will help COVID-weary society return to normal. But one ingredient has been missing from the vaccine rollout. What would that ingredient be? Honesty. Honesty. There's no, or you can see the cover, jab or else. What's missing, though, from this rollout is honesty. They won't tell you the truth, just like they won't tell you the truth about the southern border. Here, NBC comes out and said, "Yeah, we're getting all these drugs. We're apprehending criminals. They've apprehended terrorists." They just drop them off. The boat goes to the other side, picks up another group, and on and on and on it goes. They have no fear of law enforcement. So says the law enforcement agent down there. No fear. It's just wide open. Wide open borders. And then you look at the vaccine rollout, and what do you get? You get dishonesty. You get lies. You get deception. You get cover-ups. Listen to Tucker Carlson last night on the number of people that have died because, not because of COVID, they've died because of the vaccine. This was on Fox News just last night, clip one.
Between late December of 2020 and last month, a total of 3,362 people apparently died after getting the COVID vaccine in the United States. 3,362. That's an average of roughly 30 people every day.
30 people every single day. 30 people per day. And the news media, the propaganda media, totally silent. Telling you, this is totally safe. This is perfect. This vaccine that's not even been approved by the FDA yet. The emergency rollout of the vaccine killing at least 30 people. It could be, as Tucker got into last night, it could be a lot more than that. Listen to clip two here.
By the way, that reporting period ended on April 23, and we don't have numbers past that, not quite up to date. But we can assume that another 360 people at that rate have died in the 12 days since. So you put it all together, and that is a total of 3,722 deaths. That's almost 4,000 people who died after getting the COVID vaccines.
So, in truth, this is a scandal. 4,000 people dying? What? Look at the way, just by way of comparison, look at the way that they treat the so-called insurrection from January 6th. You listen to the news reporting even to this day, and one could easily be forgiven for thinking that thousands and thousands of people died. In fact, only one person was killed that day, and she was shot dead by a police officer. That's it. And there were two police officers right next to her before she got up into the window to climb into the corridor. One wonders why those policemen didn't just pull her back down if she wasn't supposed to go down that way. Now, as I've said before, all of them that went inside the Capitol, they shouldn't have been trespassing. There is cause and effect. There is cause and effect. But if you want to talk about excessive force, this doesn't even make the radar as far as that's concerned. Look at the way the news media treat that, what happened on January the 6th. Look at how, even though the evidence is now clear regarding Officer Sicknick and the others that died besides Ashley Babbitt, listen again to CNN just yesterday. They're trying to justify Facebook continuing its ban on the 45th president of the United States. And so here is CNN bringing up the history that led to the ban. And basically they're saying, yeah, we agree with social media, the giants, the tech industry. We agree that Donald Trump ought to be banned. He's dangerous. Well, look at what happened on January the 6th. This is CNN from yesterday, clip 15.
It was Trump with that video on the day of the insurrection saying to those rioters who ended up killing people,
there was a deadly insurrection that the right wing is trying to cover up, and that threat does remain today.
Good point, Brian.
Good point, Brian, says his friend Jim Sciutto. Good point about the deadly insurrection. And, of course, the other woman, she set it up by saying the rioters who ended up killing people. The rioters, the protesters, killing people, which didn't happen. It did not happen. They killed no one. Those protesters, no one, not one person. And she says not one person like Ashley Babbitt, and of course they didn't even kill her, the police did. She says the rioters, by that she means the Trump supporters, were killing people. That's yesterday, May the 5th. What are we? 4 months on. And still they continue with the lies. Meanwhile, you have now thousands of people in the United States. This is actual fact. Tucker's getting his stats from the U.S. government. Okay, he's getting his stats from what the government turns out. And of course, the government has good reason to downplay this or to not count as many deaths as a result of taking the shot. Certainly not like they did with the COVID deaths last year. Think about the big fake news story from last year. It was saying there's all these deaths because of COVID-19. It didn't matter if you got hit by a car. If you died with COVID, it's a COVID death. Total exaggeration, total fake news. And now the deaths start rolling in as a result of the vaccine, and nothing. They have nothing to say. They're not like Mike Wallace 40 years ago saying, hey, look at this woman. Look at what do you, you CDC director, what do you have to say about this woman that was paralyzed because of your drug? You get none of that today. I'll play a bit more from that Mike Wallace segment that we covered yesterday here in just a moment. But listen again to Tucker Carlson from last night. This is clip 3.
The actual number is almost certainly higher than that, perhaps vastly higher than that. The data we just cited come from the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS. VAERS is managed by the CDC and the FDA. VAERS has received a lot of criticism over the years, some of it founded. Some critics have argued for a long time that VAERS undercounts vaccine injuries. A report submitted to the Department of Health and Human Services in 2010 concluded that, quote, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported by the VAERS system. Fewer than 1%.
VAERS, as he said there, is managed by the CDC and the FDA. And according to them, almost 4,000. And then, as Tucker goes on to say there, they've been criticized in the past for fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported to the VAERS system. So it could be much, much more. We don't know for sure how many. Tucker wasn't going to speculate on how many. But let's just say this. Last year we saw that as far as COVID deaths are concerned, it's just a fraction of the overall deaths that got counted who actually died from COVID alone. Most of them, you know all about the comorbidities and the elderly and so on, the most vulnerable groups, obesity, diabetes, all of that factored in significantly. But here we are, we're talking about people from all age ranges, and these are just the deaths that Tucker's talking to you about. What about some of the other side effects that don't necessarily kill you, but nevertheless come as a result of the vaccine, the double jab? And what are the media there to tell you to do? Jab or else. You put it into your body or else. They lie to you. They intimidate. The lies come in the form of, hey, it's just a little bit of water and sugar. It's not a big deal. And it'll save your life. It will save your life. They lie, don't they? They lie. Listen to one final clip here. This is from Tucker's show last evening, clip 4.
But it's clear that what is happening now, for whatever reason, is not even close to normal. It's not even close to what we see in previous years with previous vaccines. Most vaccines are not accused of killing large numbers of people. The Menveo vaccine, for example, is given to people around the world, often children, to prevent bacterial meningitis. In this country, only one person died from that vaccine in the entire period between 2010 and 2015. One.
That's incredible. To compare that to what's happened just in the last few months. Almost 4,000 people, and perhaps quite a lot more, It just depends on how VAERS collects the data, I suppose. How much of it is being suppressed? You know what struck me about Tucker's segment from last night? Really, for as explosive as it is, the revelations, it was pretty tame in the way that it was delivered. He, as you know, he just gives the monologue. He has some really good producers. They write excellent content, generally speaking. And he's laying out some facts and then delivering it in a relatively calm manner. But I guess the reason it stood out to me as somewhat tame is because I was just comparing it to what Mike Wallace would have done 40-some years ago. He was, in that segment that we played a few clips yesterday on this show. In that segment, I was struck by just how aggressive he was. He was known for that. I mean, he'd go after you. He went after the CDC head in that segment from 40 years ago. Yesterday, I played the opening of that segment and then some from that woman who was paralyzed as a result of that swine flu vaccine from 1976. And here's a bit more from that 60 Minutes segment. This was the news when they weren't all propagandists. This was the news when even liberal left-wingers were interested in getting at the truth. This was the news at a time when the news gatherers spoke some truth to power. It's very different today. Here's that segment from 40-some years ago, clip 5.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine. And that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
They gave them a different vaccine. So it wasn't tested. It wasn't just, this is a lot like what we're seeing today. The fact that they weren't able to properly test the COVID-19 vaccine. Not enough time. So it's an emergency though. They removed all restrictions and they just rolled it out. And now people are dying and nobody is being held to account. Furthermore, the news media could care less. They could care less. Last year, it was lock everything down if we could possibly just save one life. This year, everybody takes the jab. Doesn't matter if we lose tens of thousands. Take the jab or else. Listen to how Mike Wallace confronts the head of the CDC, the one who basically rolled out this swine flu vaccine. He was responsible. He pushed it. This was the U.S. government. And here is 60 Minutes. Here is Mike Wallace confronting the government, in this case, clip 6.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
Mike Wallace telling him, it wasn't. It wasn't tested. He tried to run away from the question. He tried to say, I don't know. Mike Wallace said, you're the head of the CDC. That man was uncomfortable. You could tell. Listen again to some from that segment, clip 7.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hatwick?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hatwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hatwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
He absolutely knew They knew that this was dangerous. And he told the head of the CDC. And Mike Wallace was there to expose the lie. He was there to confront the one who abused his power. He was there to confront the organization that was putting American lives at risk. And there was the case study, as I played for you yesterday, the woman that was paralyzed because of taking this flu vaccine that she never, ever would have taken were it not for the fact that the government's publicity machine was out there saying, you've got to take this or else you could die from swine flu. That was a much smaller scale compared to what we're seeing today, but eerily similar on the one hand, and also very different on the other when you consider the way the media treated that story back in the 1970s and 80s, and the way the media operate today. They're part of the problem. Today, it's, as I said yesterday, today it's the media in bed with the CDC and worshiping Fauci. He may not be perfect, but he's the closest thing to perfection we have in the country, says the New York Times. Unbelievable. How dangerous is this kind of thinking? This arrogance, this attack, these lies, the deception, all over the place. There's a few, but not nearly enough. There's a few in the media who are willing to confront. There was one yesterday, by the way, who confronted Governor Cuomo in New York about the edict from last year and all of the deaths in nursing homes that resulted from that. And listen to the way Governor Cuomo responded to this reporter. This is clip 8.
The exact same thing, because you have said that the reason why you did not provide the data was because you feared that data would be used politically against you. So no.
Don't tell me what I said.
Okay. Don't tell me what I said. This is a reporter telling him what he said. And his response, don't tell me what I said. So they just get squashed. They just get smashed. No humility. No apologies. He just basically puts the reporter right back in his place. And I'm sure if he pushes anymore, he'll probably be escorted right out of the briefings. He probably won't be included in it. They don't want to hear from a dissenting voice. They want to squash it. They want to censor it. And then carry on with their lies, as he did in this same press conference, clip 9.
The Republicans politicized an order, that a health order, that was put out by the State Department of Health on March 25th. Which was, from a medical point of view, smart.
Of course that edict from last year was smart, because he's smart, right?
I am smart.
He's smart. The edict is smart. Everything is smart. Everything worked. The edict from March 25th, the edict that sent sick people into nursing homes, sick elderly people into nursing homes that did not have hospital equipment for quarantining and that sort of thing. They just sent them right back into the nursing homes, and perhaps, I think it's at least 15,000, but we could be talking about tens of thousands that died in New York, and then it was covered up. It was all covered up by that man you just saw. And what does he say? He says, well, it's the Republicans. The whole reason they investigated us in New York is because of politics, politically motivated. So you cannot investigate these people. You cannot confront them. Even when the evidence comes in and they're proven to be totally wrong and fraudulent, they carry on with the lie, the big lie. President Trump, he called the vote steal from last year. Earlier this week, he called it the big lie. That's how he's going to refer to it from here on out. And he is exactly right. There's just so many lies. We're living in a world filled with lies. There was an article, by the way, at Real, real clear policy about the Iowa election. You remember the controversial election between these two Congress, or these two people running for Congress, these two women. And it came down to the Republican winning by 6 votes. And the Democrats, remember, now the Democrat has since conceded, so it's over and done with. But at Real Clear Policy, there's this, I think the attorney who represented the Republican candidate, who's now in Congress, he wrote out the story, basically, and explained in detail what the Democrats tried to do to cheat their way to victory, to cheat their way in. He was just appalled. He couldn't believe it was happening. They were breaking laws. They were breaking with protocol. They were doing everything and anything in their power to try to get another radical Democrat in Congress. And what brought the recount and such to light, I think they had a certain precinct or whatever that recounted, and it flipped it. It went to the Democrat. Then they recounted again just through the machines, and then it flipped back. And so at the early stages, you had people on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, saying, well, hey, let's slow this down a little bit and make sure we get a proper recount so that we can find out who, in fact, won. And that's when the wheels from the Democrat machine started to get moving. That's when they were starting to get moving to overturn this, if possible. It says here, recount boards had the choice of machine or hand recounts. A hand recount would mean individually tallying each ballot. A machine recount would mean repeating the process used on Election Day. We felt, this is the Republican attorney, he said, we felt that a machine recount was the only way to guarantee consistency in the process and to avoid unduly emphasizing or valuing votes in certain counties over others. So their position was, hey, if we're going to recount it, let's do it the same way that it happened on Election Day so that there's at least consistency. That was what he argued. It says the Hart campaign, that's the Democrat that lost, the Hart campaign had a different view. It pushed for hand counts in 2 urban counties, Johnson and Scott, but agreed to a machine recount elsewhere. So they wanted different standards for different counties, which is exactly what happened in 2020 in all of those swing states. I mean, this reveals the thinking of the Democrats. It didn't just happen in Iowa. It happened in Georgia. It happened in Arizona. It happened in New Hampshire. It happened in Michigan. It happened in Wisconsin, in Nevada, Pennsylvania. Do it by the book in these rural counties. But, you know, the county around Philadelphia or Detroit or Milwaukee, it's got to be different there. I mean, we've got to do it a lot differently. So they go through the recount, and the Democrats say, we want to do a hand count. So basically, they could find a few more votes. And the machines wouldn't do that for them. Not in this case. In November, I think it did. But leave that aside. But here they were calling for 2 standards, a 2-tiered standard for election integrity. It says, this episode never received the attention it deserved. Backing up, it says, after a technician replaced a part. Well, he goes on and talks about the disastrous effort to recount. They had problems with the machines. The technician comes in. Like I said, it went back and forth. This was during the perfect election, keep in mind. This was the same election. It was just down ballot. This was the same election, November 3rd, 2020. It says here, when prominent Democrats accuse Republicans of being vote suppressors, I think of the actions of Hart's lawyers from the Democratic-aligned law firm of Perkins Coie. We know about them, don't we? And know how hypocritical these accusations are. The Scott County recount was another sorry example of the Hart campaign's ethics. And again, I don't have time to just get into all the details here. It's pretty tedious, this account. But it was very helpful reading it this morning. It gives you a preview, or it gives you an inside look into the radical leftist mindset. Whatever it takes to amass power, just like my father has written, we're getting a hard look at what they're willing to do to stay in power, to get in power, to maintain power, to grow their power. It says here, the official election return showed that Scott County had tallied 64,052 absentee ballots. At the end of the illegal hybrid recount, the tally showed 64,183. So they came up with another 130 ballots through a machine recount of all things. So the Republican side is obviously saying, well, hang on a second. How did this happen? Where did these extra ballots show up? Or how did they show up? Where did they come from? And then it goes on and says how that once it was almost final, the Republicans still ahead in the end by 6 votes, the Hart campaign continued to contest. And of course, the proper avenue through which you should do that would be the courts in Iowa. But instead, they went to their friends in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., the Democrat majority in D.C., and sought for their intervention to just overturn the election, to not accept the Republican. And as you know, there were some higher-ups in the Democrat Party that were on board with it. The problem is, in the end, they just couldn't get a few moderate Democrats. You know, the Democrats only have a slim majority in the House of Representatives. So they knew they would lose in court. So they bypassed the court system in Iowa. They went to the House of Representatives where they had a slim majority. And they very nearly had Nancy Pelosi and all them on board with it. But they just couldn't get a few moderate Democrats that probably come from red states or red counties. They couldn't get them on board with it. So finally, the Hart campaign had to concede. They looked for every option that they could to try to cheat their way to victory. So when you see how hard they are fighting the Democrat establishment, how hard they are fighting to prevent an actual audit, an actual hand recount, whether it's Maricopa County, they're fighting over it in Windham County or the city of Windham up in New Hampshire. You know why. You know why they're trying to stop it. They don't want to be exposed. They don't want the fraud to be exposed. They cheated. So it's so obvious just in looking at the way they behave. It's described in this article at Real Clear Policy. And then you look at the shenanigans, whether it's Maricopa or New Hampshire, as I say. Yesterday, by the way, the DOJ actually got involved. The DOJ sent a letter to the Republican senators in Arizona that are spearheading this audit, basically threatening them. If you read between the lines, they're threatening the senators in Arizona. They're meddling in the state of Arizona. Remember several months ago, When you had Republicans that were really pushing for, Trump supporters that were pushing for this to get to the Supreme Court, and several of the actions did, and in every case, the Supreme Court said, there's no standing here. We can't really meddle in this. These are states' issues. Now you've got the feds involved. Now the feds are sending, they're firing off letters. They're worried, you see. They know there's an illegitimate president in the White House right now. They know he's fake President Biden. And so fake President Biden's DOJ is firing off a letter to the Arizona Senate saying, look, I think you might be guilty of intimidation. Intimidation of all things. They're guilty of exactly what they're accusing the Arizona Senate of. This is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. It says the U.S. Department of Justice expressed concern Wednesday about ballot security and potential voter intimidation arising from the Republican-controlled Arizona Senate's unprecedented private recount of the 2020 presidential election. And then it quotes from the DOJ letter. The DOJ, it says, past experience with similar investigative efforts around the country has raised concerns that they can be directed at minority voters, which potentially can implicate the anti-intimidation prohibitions of the Voting Rights Act. Here we go again. Racist. What you're doing there is racist. A hand recount. Surprise, surprise. It's headed up by the racists. They're trying to suppress the vote. You know what's happening here? Is they want every single ballot, piece of paper, whatever it was that was submitted, they want all of it counted, the Democrats. The Republicans want the legal ones counted. That's what it amounts to. The ballots submitted by dead people, people underage, people living out of state, people who don't exist. This is why the Democrat machine is panicking. They are in full-scale panic right now, trying to do anything that they can, because they know that if Arizona gets to the truth on this, it's going to blow the lid off of this entire operation. And this is just one county in one state. This is going to be devastating for the fake Biden administration. You look at what's happening up at Windham County, it's just a small little city in New Hampshire. And many months ago, we learned that once someone went in there and looked at the smaller races, the down ballot races, the local elections, every single Republican was cheated out of about 300 votes. It wasn't exactly the same right across the board, but every single one of them, they had 300 votes that didn't get counted. And then on the other hand, the Democrats had 90 more votes than they had. So it didn't affect the races in a major way, a few hundred votes here and there. But the fact that it was right across the board, here again, it made the Republicans in the state Senate, in the state legislature, it made them say, well, if it's this way in this little tiny community, I mean, they found that there were it was a 6% degree of error. 6%. So when it's just a few hundred people, that doesn't amount to much. But with a million voters, you're talking about 60,000 votes. So they just want to look into it. And now what's going on in New Hampshire is it's a brawl. It's a fight over who gets to count or recount or conduct this audit. And the ones that are weaseling their way into it, they've made it known. They don't want any recounts, not any proper official ones. There's one guy that's on the counting board or who's going to be responsible for the audit that's already made public statements about Maricopa as if he knows anything about Maricopa County. They shouldn't have that recount in Arizona. And so the locals there are upset, as they should be. All we're looking for is a proper recount. We don't want someone coming in who's just going to try to squash it, who's just going to try to blot it out, who's just going to try to bury it. Pretty amazing. New Hampshire, by the way, if you look at the race in 2020, Donald Trump got 365,000 votes. And if you compare it to 2016, he got 345,000. So, and Hillary Clinton barely beat him in 2016 by 3,000 votes. Trump got 345,000. Clinton got 348,000. And then this time around, Donald Trump gets 365,000. This never happens when an incumbent always goes down when he's competing or campaigning for his second term. It happened to Obama, as popular as he was. Donald Trump gained votes right across the board. He pulled in millions more than he did in 2016. He pulled in 20,000 more in New Hampshire alone, surpassing even what Hillary Clinton got in 2016, 348,000. And you know how many Joe Biden got this time around in New Hampshire? 424,000 votes. They're fighting in New Hampshire about how the audit is to be conducted because they want to make sure that whoever conducts it just gets into those little tiny, tiny, tiny local elections. You know, the few hundred here, a few hundred there. We certainly don't want someone to see or to examine the ballots and to see what happened right there at the top of the ballot. That would be the presidential election. Because if they examined that, they would find massive amounts of fraud. That's the truth. That's the truth. I've got a human events story that kind of spells out some of the detail in New Hampshire, but we just don't have the time to go there. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Email the program, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
Good.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Breathing out, breathing in, more precious than it's ever been. We can't take it for granted. Never in our lifetimes has that fact been clearer, that precious breath of life. It might start to shorten. It might struggle. It might cease. How can it be protected? How can it be prolonged? How can it be saved? And what is the purpose anyway? What is the purpose of human life? What should you use that breath for? Most of us turn to doctors. It's a reflex, but it's becoming more and more clear that the medical industry does not have all the answers. It can be amazingly helpful, but can it actually heal? Is this the place to turn for healing after all? The human body, human breath, human life was designed, powered, preserved. It was created. Who made it? With something so important as your life, you need to know the creator of life. The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong will show you from your Bible the answers to the questions even most Christians are afraid to ask. Is the day of miracles past? Does the living God heal sickness? Did God raise up medical science for our day? What is the role of doctors? You can have not only sound health, but a sound mind. Go to thetrumpet.com and search The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
In the 13th section of Psalm 119, we went through that yesterday. We saw how that God's children are identified. They're identified as those who love God's law. As verse 97 says, "Oh, how love I thy law. I just love it. I can't get enough of it. It's all I can think about. It's all that I want to study. It's a lifesaver." Verse 105, the next section, the 14th section, it says, "The word, your word rather, is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path." God's word is a lamp. The Bible, spiritually speaking, is light. Jesus Christ came to this earth to bring light, spiritual light, to this earth, to open our minds to understand the truth. But John 3 says that men loved darkness. They didn't want to receive the light. They didn't want to use the Bible as a lamp to light up their path so that they can know where they're going, so that they can know where to go. Matthew 5, you can look at verses 14 and 16. That's Jesus Christ saying to his disciples, "You are the light of the world. You're like a shining city on a hill. You're here to set an example. You're here to lead the way." God's church, God's family leads the way. It leads the world to God. Of course, the world right now is in darkness. So we're not yet in the positions of teachers, but we soon will be. We soon will be teaching all the world. It says in Proverbs 4 and verse 18, "But the path of the just is like a shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day." The path of the just, it's like a shining sun. What a beautiful, beautiful expression or proverb. And here in Psalm 119, the prophet says, "Your word is a lamp unto my feet. It lights up my path." Verse 106, to continue, it says, "I have sworn and I will perform it, and I will keep your righteous judgments. I am afflicted very much. Quicken me, O Lord, according unto your word. Accept, I beseech you, the freewill offerings of my mouth, O Eternal, and teach me your judgments. My soul is continually in my hand." It says, "Yet do I not forget your law. The wicked have laid a snare for me. Yet I erred not from your precepts. It says, your testimonies have I taken as an heritage forever, for they are the rejoicing of my heart. I have inclined my heart to perform your statutes always, even unto the end. I'm going to keep it all the way to the end, all the way through. I've got to endure to the end. I've got to make it to the finish line. As I tell our young people, those counseling for baptism here at God's College, look, you want to get off to a good start, and that's what baptism represents, but you have to finish. You have to finish. You have to make it. This is your one opportunity. The Bible says, he that endures to the end, the same shall be saved. So we must make it to the end goal. A lot of Christians haven't done that. They've fallen away. They've gone astray. I've talked before about the importance of endurance. I won't get into it again here, but it's worth noting, just in passing here, that it's all for naught if we don't finish. If we don't finish in this race. The next section continues, verse 113. Jeremiah says, I hate vain thoughts, but your law do I love. I hate vain thoughts, but I love your law, echoing what he said in verse 97. Here we're taught in this section that to love God's law is to fear God and to fear his judgments, to submit to him. Godly fear, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not cowering in fear in the basement because of a flu. It's nothing like that. It's godly fear. It's wanting to obey God. It's knowing that if we don't, that curses are going to set in. So it's the straight and narrow way, not the wide, popular, broad way, as Jesus said. Verse 114, it says, you are my hiding place and my shield. I hope in your word. Depart from me, you evildoers, it says, for I will keep the commandments of my God. Uphold me according unto your word, that I may live. And let me not be ashamed of my hope. It says, hold you me up, and I shall be safe. And I will have respect unto your statutes continually. Hold me up, God. Make me strong. Keep me safe. These are the precious words we want to concentrate on daily. Meditate on these words, on this truth. Verse 120, it says, my flesh trembles for fear of you. See, there's proper godly fear. My flesh trembles for fear of you, for I am afraid of your judgments. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13, I can read that for you. Solomon said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole man. This is what it's all about. This is our whole purpose for being. Fear God, keep his commandments, fear his judgments, as it says here in Psalm 119, verse 120. The next section, the 16th section, verse 121, it says, I have done judgment and justice. Leave me not to mine oppressors. So here we find that there's safety. There's protection in God's law. It's there, not like Mr. Armstrong said in Missing Dimension in Sex. It's not the laws of the do's and don'ts of God's law. They're not meant to deprive us of anything that's good and wholesome and right. They're there to protect us. When God says, don't do this, he's trying to spare us agony and suffering and pain and death and sorrow. Do this, and you'll have life, and you'll have abundance. Do this, and well, it's going to work out a lot differently. Read Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, or see what Moses said at the end of Deuteronomy 30. Choose life, choose obedience, choose blessings. Don't choose death, don't choose disobedience. There is safety and protection in God's law. Verse 123, it says, mine eyes fail for your salvation and for the word of your righteousness. See, salvation, That's an Old Testament message as well. These verses, Paul said to Timothy, the Old Testament, they're able to make you wise unto salvation. That's all that Timothy and his mother and his grandmother had. You can read that in the last bit of 2 Timothy 3. He was brought up on the Old Testament. And then as it happens, I'm speaking of Timothy, but then Paul, Timothy's supervisor, Timothy's boss in the ministry, God used him to help canonize the New Testament writings. And then that when that project was finished, you have the complete package. You have two testaments that go together perfectly. They go together hand in hand. They're able to make you wise unto salvation. Verse 126, it says, "It is time for you, eternal, to work, for they have made void your law." God, it's time for you to work. You take action here. And that's what we must wait on. I've talked before about how long does this continue? How long all this unlawful activity at the border? How long all of this fraudulent activity and behavior? How long the lies, the deception, before they're fully exposed, before God takes action to save Israel by the hand of Jeroboam? God will act. God says in Revelation, or rather Romans 12, he says, "Vengeance is mine." Don't seek vengeance yourself. Just learn to trust God in faith. Put your faith, put your trust, put your confidence in God. It says in verse 129, "Your testimonies are wonderful. Therefore does my soul keep them." Here again, we read earlier in one of our studies about the wondrous works, the wondrous truth that God will open our minds to. And here, as the psalmist begins the 17th section, we read of the wondrous miracle of God and his law, the miracles it brings into our lives if we obey. Verse 130 says, "The entrance of your words gives light. It gives understanding unto the simple. I opened my mouth and panted, for I longed for your commandments. Look upon me, look you upon me, and be merciful unto me, as you usest to do unto those that love your name." It says, "Order my steps in your word, and let not any sin, any iniquity, have dominion over me. Deliver me from the oppression of man. So will I keep your precepts. Make your face to shine upon your servant, and teach me your statutes." It says, "Rivers of waters run down my eyes because they keep not your law." See, it brings sorrow and pain and suffering when we don't observe these laws. On the other hand, when we do, the joy, the happiness, the peace, the contentment. My father says in the Isaiah booklet, "Men and women will get down on their knees and plant roses. They will make this earth beautiful. Mankind will see what they can accomplish when their energy has a godly focus. What a magnificent change this earth will experience. The earth is about to burst forth in joy and singing." Think of a time when everyone's going to be studying Psalms like what we're reading, like what we're studying, like what we're going through. He says, "People will be singing vigorously all over the world because they are so filled with joy." What a miraculous change from today's world. What a change when the whole world, as the psalmist says here, embraces these words of light. The words of light, the words of joy, the words of happiness, these precious, precious words of God. Well, verse 137 begins yet another section, and we'll finish off with these few remaining sections left in Psalm 119 on tomorrow's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to submit some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.